appreciate the reading there just a few moments ago. It kind of goes along with what, well, it actually does go along with what we're looking at this morning. We're looking at the subject of how to find the way of escape. And of course, I'm sure many of us know that that's found, this way of escape is found in 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse 13. Now you might turn there. Right after an admonition, don't think that you stand in such a way that you cannot fall. For the passage says, let him who thinks he stands take heed that he does not fall. So the possibility of falling is there. And what do you find? Well, then next you find in verse 13, things that relate to that. And it goes down to the base of things. You know, if you remember what was just read in James chapter 1, it's actually talking about the progression of things that lead to sin and then spiritual death. But if you think about sin, and the expression I guess sometimes is when you peel back the onion, you know, and you look down inside, you're going to find down in there at the base is temptation. Temptation is not sin, but temptation leads to sin. It will, if left unchecked and followed and entered into, it will ultimately produce sin. But there is a way of escape. If you look at all that and how it works and realize there's this process to it, there's a way of escape. And then it says in verse 13, no temptation has overtaken you, but such as is common to man. And God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able, but with the temptation will provide the way of escape also, so that you will be able to bear it. Good passage. I think probably a lot of times many of us have taken a lot of comfort from the passage, knowing that temptation comes our way and there's a way of escape. You know, we can avoid this, we can get out of it, we can get away from it. And of course, obviously, if we avoid that, then all the other things that would follow along after that, leading to sin, well, we'd be avoiding all of those as well. Because there would be nothing to build on if we could just do something about temptation. Now, one of the things as we look for this and how to find that way, see, that there it is, you know, to know that there's a way of escape, but then how do we find it? And what all does this mean? I want to suggest to you that the answer, I think, is a whole lot simpler than what we might originally think about this. But he tells us in 1 Corinthians 10:13 that temptation is something that is common to man. And I think that's true. And I would go so far as to say, sooner or later, something's going to happen to you, to me, that comes in the form of a temptation. And I also understand that temptations are relative. In other words, what might be a temptation to you might not be to me. What's a temptation to me might not be to you. And I don't think we have to sit around and explain to each other, you know, what there might be that's a temptation or not a temptation and things like that. But as long as we understand that they're relative. But sometimes it's just almost impossible to avoid some things because, you know, face it. We have a lot of things that are going on out here. You think about things that you see on TV. You know, you could be watching a football game on TV. And all the commercials that are on there, you know, the Browns are on this afternoon. I suppose some people will be watching. I probably will. Some of it. But you watch these commercials, and I mean, there's all kinds of things just being thrust in your face. There are temptations to a lot of people. I've got an idea. If someone is a recovering alcoholic, there's going to be commercials on there that, well, they present themselves a little bit of a temptation to someone like that, wouldn't they? You know how that is. And you can go to the store, you can go anywhere, wherever you go, you turn on the radio, you know, we're just about just bombarded, it seems like, with a number of things. And it's not going to do any good. This is the thing that I watch some of these commentators on TV, and I'll tell you, whenever I just quit listening. I mean, they go on and talk until their tongues fall out of their head. But I quit listening when one of them will be having somebody on there. They'll ask them a question, then they're explaining it. And then the host says something like, well, I don't care about that. That doesn't have any effect to me. It may have to other people, though. It may mean a lot to someone else. They might be interested in what this person's got to say. I feel like just yelling at the TV and saying, it's not all about you. So don't just pass it off, you know. Oh, well, you know, that's not a temptation to me, so it just doesn't matter. It's a real problem, someone else. Common to man are the words that are used here. And I think, you know, we need to address this and understand everything that means. It's something, I guess what I'm saying is that it ought to be expected. But then there's the giving into temptation, as we pointed out before, it leads to sin. All of sin and falling short of the glory of God. All of sin. That means that in some place, you know, you peel back and look at this. If all have sinned, then that means some place at some time all have been tempted. Some have escaped and some haven't. How'd all that go about? Well, even though we might have given in to temptation in the past, that doesn't mean that we must do so again in the future. Hopefully we can learn from that and make the proper corrections and adjustments and so on. If there's some place that causes a lot of temptation to you, don't go there. Avoid it. Or people. We need to learn how to find the way of escape so that we might keep ourselves from sin. I think that's something that's important. And if we don't do something about temptation, we would be playing the fool to think that somehow or another we're bulletproof and sin will never come our way. You just don't do that. It's just like a secret, silent enemy that sneaks up on you. And before you know it, you find out, oh wait, I am affected. And now look where I'm at. Well, here's the thing. The first thing to find a way of escape is to recognize that there will be one. There is one. I don't think that we're ever going to find ourselves in a situation where our only choice is to sin. I just reject that out of hand. Now, I reject that out of hand. I don't have a passage up there to back that up. I'm just going to tell you why I reject it out of hand. Because we're free moral agents and we have choices. There's a yes or a no. So that's not it. That we're some situation, that's all we can do, and so on. Not so. Now, how do we know, though, there's this way of escape? Well, it says right in the middle of verse 13 in 1 Corinthians 10 that God is faithful. But what does that mean? Well, it means that He's faithful here. He's promising something. And we can take comfort in knowing that those promises are going to come to pass. Look at Hebrews chapter 6, 17 and 18. In the same way, God, desiring even more to show to the heirs of the promise the unchangeableness of His purpose, interposed with an oath, so that by two unchangeable things, in which it is impossible for God to lie, we who have taken refuge would have strong encouragement to take hold of the hope set before us. Well, God can't lie, and He's promised a way of escape. Therefore, the way of escape will be there. Someone may say, well, I didn't see it or something. Well, now we'll get to that in just a moment. But it's there. We see it or not, it's there. And the other part of this is, it's this strong encouragement to take hold of the hope set before us. Now, in relationship to 1 Corinthians 10, the hope that's set before us is that there's a way of escape. And I think sometimes because we don't see it, it might be because we're not really looking, or maybe we don't want to look. Because, you know, we might really find it and we don't want to make changes and other things. I think a lot of that factors in, sure. But God's promised us a way of escape. We need to believe that the way of escape is there if we hope to find it. So there's the very first thing, is to take courage, take hope, that there's a way of escape. Now, I think another thing that's important here is that there comes a point in time where we have to learn to discern right and wrong. Now, discern's an old word. And most dictionaries will tell you that discern means understand. Right. Understand right from wrong. You know what that means, don't you? That you're able to tell the difference. Now, I understand little children sometimes can't tell the difference. But I think you get to a point in life where you're able to tell the difference in things. Aren't you? Now, I know that there's some people that they never develop that because of something to do, something congenital at birth, or an accident, or whatever it might be. But most people learn right from wrong. Yeah. And they can say all that they want of how they were raised in the home, and this and that and the other, you know, and they try to downplay their ability to learn right from wrong. Oh, I didn't see it in the home, one thing or another. Oh, I see. And so you went out of the home, out here into some kind of a vacuum. We learn right and wrong any number of ways. And to think that you've gone all through your life, I don't know, say you're 35 years old, and you've gone all through life and you've never known the difference between right and wrong. Really? And so you've never, you know, fallen off a cliff or something. How'd you get by with that? Yeah, think about it. It's sad that people use that as an excuse. But now, we're supposed to learn how to discern right from wrong. And the Bible tells us that that's something that's important. Now, here's why it's important. This learning right from wrong is all about sin and temptation. And in the context, what is wrong is that which violates God's law. 1 John 3:4, sin is transgression of the law. Sin is doing something wrong. That's what a transgression is. God says to do this. If you don't do it, that's wrong. That's a sin. Now, that's how it's been defined as long as I've been around, and that's, I think, how it's been defined even before I was around, because that's what the Scriptures tell us. And I think that we know that. And then, I guess you could say, implied in there is that there's a right and a wrong. Otherwise, there would be no sin. What else? Well, the Scriptures, we are told, train us in righteousness. Now, you look at the passage right there, where the Scriptures are given by the inspiration of God. And it goes on to say that one of the things these Scriptures are given for, instruction in righteousness. Now tell me, is that training? Is that education? Is that training? Is that telling you something? Yes, it would be. And what would it be telling you about? Well, it would be telling you about what? Righteousness. You know what righteousness means? I forget how everybody views that today. It doesn't. You know, righteousness is an old, it comes from an old English word, righteous does, that meant right wise, W-I-S-E. It was two words, right wise. And they got jammed together over time and they became one word, and that word was righteous. Righteous, right wise, they sound alike. All right. Well, what did right wise mean? Well, it was used in the sense of just doing the right thing, which means that they're is a right thing, which means that then there would be a wrong thing. And the Scriptures are going to train us in what the right way and the right thing is. Then hopefully we do that. Now here in Hebrews chapter 5 and verse 14, it talks about getting to a point of spiritual growth. No longer the babe, but now mature. And part of being mature, now as a Christian, full grown, mature, it goes on to say that you're able to discern right from wrong. And that's part of growing up. Now, you know that's the case in the physical world, in the material world. You learn right from wrong. I don't care what you do, there's a right and a wrong. If you think for a minute that there's a burner on the stove that's on, electric burner, and it's nice and red and everything, if you think that, well, I don't know right from wrong on this and lay your hand on it, you won't get burned, will you? Well, you'll get burned. You learn right from wrong. You learn not to do that. Number of other things. And then when we get over here in the religious world, though, it's as though with some folks, right and wrong don't exist anymore. That it doesn't matter right or wrong, God's just going to overlook everything. And He's just going to say, well done, good and faithful servant, whatever you do. Wasn't your fault anyway. You're not responsible. You're not accountable. I think that's what people hope for. I've never been able to find that anywhere in the Scriptures. But we're supposed to grow up. We're supposed to get to the point that we understand what the Bible trains us in, and through that, we're able to make a distinction, discernment, understanding between right and wrong. So we can learn to be able to tell the difference. And any time we're tempted, we have the option to do what is right. Furthermore, since the option to do right is there, we ought to really consider our options, perhaps more often than we do. And a lot of times, turn to Matthew chapter 7. A lot of times, we simply need to make better choices. I tried this week to think of a different way to put this, and I can't come up with one. And I think that's it. I can't go any further than just say, you know, we need to make better choices. Who is there that's been around and doesn't admit, you know, well, I could have made better choices? Now, maybe not all the time, but there's sometimes you can remember something like that. Wish I'd made a different choice on this. I can think of a mistake I made several years ago. Wish I'd never done it. And I've thought about that a lot. And I thought to myself, well, don't do it again. But yeah, making better choices. Wouldn't that factor into this way of escape? That sometimes it might be down there at the base where this starts. Make a better choice. You got the opportunity. Take it. Make a better choice. Now in the Sermon on the Mount, let's start off with Matthew chapter 7, verse 13 and 14. Just look at those for a moment. Enter through the narrow gate, for the gate is wide and the way is broad that leads to destruction. And there are many who enter through it, for the gate is small and the way is narrow that leads to life, and there are few who find it. So what's that saying there? Broad way or the narrow way? You make a choice. That's what it's saying. Well, what comes next? Well, look at 15 through 20. Beware of false prophets who come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly are ravenous wolves. You will know them by their fruits. Grapes are not gathered from thorn bushes, nor figs from thistles. Are they? So every good tree bears good fruit, but the bad tree bears bad fruit. A tree cannot produce bad fruit. Good tree cannot produce bad fruit, nor can a bad tree produce good fruit. Every tree that does not bear good fruit is cut down and thrown into the fire. So then, you will know them by their fruits. Well, what are we looking about here and what are we talking about? Well, it boils down to this. There are false teachers or the truth. And you make a choice. And the good tree is going to have good fruit, the bad tree is going to have bad fruit. And as much as people would like to tell you, oh, the bad tree will have good fruit and the good tree will have bad fruit, that's not what it says. You make a choice, you reap what you sow. We're told in Galatians 6. But we need to make better choices. Matthew chapter 7, verses 21 through 23. Not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of heaven, but he who does the will of my Father who is in heaven will enter. Many will say to me on that day, Lord, Lord, did we not prophesy in your name, and in your name cast out demons, and in your name perform many miracles? And then I will declare to them, I never knew you. Depart from me, you who practice iniquity. So what's it going to be? The Lord's will or iniquity? These are tough choices, aren't they? But you know what? They're choices that have to be made. And I think that's what Jesus was driving at here at the end of the Sermon on the Mount. And I especially know that's the case when you get to the next part, which is verses 24 through 27. Therefore, see, we're coming to the conclusion. That's what this is there for. Everyone, watch, who hears these sayings of mine, and what's next, and acts on them, two things. You hear them and you act on them. Maybe compared to a wise man who built his house on the rock, the rain fell and the floods came and the winds blew and slammed against that house, and yet it did not fall, for it had been founded on the rock. Now everyone who hears these words of mine, same thing. No difference in the words or the hearing in either case. Everyone who hears these words of mine and then what? And does not act on them. There's the rub, isn't it? That's what's different. We'll be like a foolish man who built his house on the sand. The rain fell and the floods came and the winds blew and slammed against that house. And it fell. And great was its fall. You know, the things that came against the house on the rock and the house on the sand were the same things. Same things. One stood, one didn't. They heard the same things. What's the difference? They acted on it. They did these things. So what's it going to be? Follow the Lord's sayings or not? We need to make better choices, don't we? The way of escape is there. Let's make good choices. Let's consider things in the light of what's said in the Scriptures. There's this word that's being used a lot, and I think it's got all kinds of validity to it. But it talks about a worldview. And what that means is how an individual views the world. Now, you can sit there and be Pollyannish about it and say to yourself, I don't have a worldview. Oh, I see. So you live in your closet all day or something, you know. Everybody's got one. They look at the world in a certain way. They look at the world through lenses, so to speak. And that's their vision of things. That's what your worldview. There are people that look at things and they look all through it with perhaps a political focus. Everything they see is like that. Or they look at it through, a philosophical focus. That's their worldview. And some people might look at the world and their view might be in light of what the Scriptures say. Well, how does that happen? It's a choice that you make. I'm going to look at the world like this. I'm not going to listen to other people tell me how I ought to look at this and so on. I don't care what other people say. I'm going to look at this the way the Scriptures say to look at it. Now, we've seen big changes in the last few years. I'm not necessarily beating a drum here, so to speak, but you just look in the last, I don't know. You know, when we first moved to Arkansas about 2004, the big issue of an election that year was about the candidates and where they stood on gay marriage. Is that an issue anymore? No. What happened? Well, the world changed. And the world wants everybody to change their view of that subject. What's your worldview on that? I don't care what Congress or the president or everybody, I don't care what the media say. I don't care about this. It's socially acceptable. All that stuff, it's legal. I don't care. The Bible still says it's sinful. That means it's wrong. Right and wrong.
I can read this in here. What am I going to do with it? Am I going to follow the Lord's will or not? Am I going to put it into practice or not? Now, he sums this up at the end, I think, with that last one there. Being the one that really brings it home. What are you going to do with these choices? You've heard them. Here's the Sermon on the Mount, which everybody will agree, the greatest sermon ever preached. And he gets down here to the end. What are you going to do with it? And what are you going to do with everything that you've just heard? That's what he told them then, 2,000 years ago. What are we going to do today? Better choices? Yeah. We need to learn right from wrong so we can make those good choices. Now, another point is that we have to have a desire to escape sin. I think that there are a lot of people out here in the world whose comfort zone is in sin. That's right. That's their comfort zone. And consequently, they don't want to leave that. Whatever the sin is, it doesn't matter what it is. It may be occasionally or it may be constantly, whichever, but they don't want to leave that. They don't want to make any changes. I guess in the vernacular of today, they like it. And they want it to continue. And they don't appreciate it if somebody comes along knowing the difference between right and wrong and says something about it. No matter how that is. But we have to have a desire. Colossians chapter 1, verse 10. If you turn over there, look here at what's said. In Colossians chapter 1 and verse 10. Now, Paul's saying that he's writing all these things. They've been delivered. They've come from God through Jesus by inspiration to me. I'm writing to you. And here's the reason why. So that you will walk in a manner worthy of the Lord. Now watch this now. To please Him in all respects. Bearing fruit in every good work and increasing in the knowledge of God. To please Him in all respects. To please Him. I want to please myself. No, you please Him. All right, well, I'll please Him when the mood hits me, when it's convenient. You please Him, what's that other part of it? In all respects. You do it all the time. And so what we find here, there's got to be that kind of a desire. Now, we might know what's right, but have a desire to do what's wrong anyway. Now, somebody tell me if that doesn't happen sometimes. How many times have we done that? How many times, perhaps, we've done that, and then in anguish later on, you know, we're over here, and, you know, I can't pull my hair. It's not long enough, but you know what I mean. You know, we're over here like this, you know, and it's like, how in the world could I have done this? I know better. In a number of venues, right? How about whenever temptation enters in, we find ourselves involved in sin? How did this happen? How did I get here? I know better. Yeah. But if you're going to do it in all respects, you know what to do and you ought to do it. You make the better choices and so on. But you got to have this desire to engage these things and put them into practice. Now, I've got a few things here, and this isn't something that's exhaustive. Okay? I've just got a few for us to look at. And why might one knowingly violate the law of God? Not knowingly. In other words, they know what the law of God is. And they know what's right or wrong. And they do what's wrong anyway. And deliberately. They do that. Deliberately. Although, try and pass it off and blame somebody else. You know, it's kind of like Eve, you know. You know, oh, the serpent did it. And then the man, well, the woman that you gave me did it, you know. Pass it off on somebody else. But I think Adam and Eve were both responsible, weren't they? And accountable. At least that's how God looked at it. Now I realize the New York Times or MSNBC might not look at it that way. And some of your brethren might not look at it that way. But that's how God looked at it. So what are we talking about here? Knowingly violate the law of God. And by the way, Eve knew perfectly. When the serpent came,
Satan came to her and says, what about this business? She said, we may eat of every tree in the garden, but not that one over there. She knew perfectly. Did it anyway. The story of man ever since, right? So, why might one do this? Well, it could be that there's in people this spirit of rebellion. You know what it says there in Hebrews chapter 10, verse 26? Look it up. It says, if we sin, what's the word? Willfully. Willfully. It's not that we've been drug into it or forced into it like a square peg into a round hole or something like that. No, we're doing this willingly. We went into it with our eyes wide open. And there's a very good chance that we went into this because it's in our comfort zone. We want to do it. We find pleasure in it. There's pleasure in sin. Sure there is. But a spirit of rebellion. And you know, we've just got so many people that are running around today. Oh, you just can't tell me what to do. Nobody can tell me what to do. Uh-huh. Okay. And so here you come down here and you pull up, and the light's red. Can't tell me what to do. Keep that up. See how much what that gains you. And a number of other things, so many other things that are like that in life, you know. Martha and I used to, well, we haven't been up there in a good while. We used to like go up on the lake to Miller Park, and they got the warning signs out there about that swimming is not safe out there, undertow thing. And despite that, you know, we go up there. We went up there one time. Despite all that, there's somebody out there swimming. Can't tell me what to do. How many times does stuff like that happen? Stay back from the edge, and somebody's out there on the edge. And then the edge collapses, and over the side they go. There's lots of things like that. Can't tell me what to do? Sometimes being told what to do is a good thing. But they've got this spirit of rebellion. And I think even in the church there's that. I think that creeps in. It's part of the world, and we need to set that aside and get over here and eliminate the spirit of rebellion and get on board with doing the Lord's will. But also, one might knowingly violate the law of God with a desire to please men. You know, Paul mentions that. In Galatians chapter 1, when he's making his defense of his apostleship, and he goes down through there and he discusses a few things, then he gets down to verse 10 and he said, you know, if I desired to please men, would all these things that happened to me be happening to me? Well, the unwritten answer is no, they wouldn't. But he's not desiring to please men. He'd get away from it if he was. What is he desiring to please? He's desiring to please God. And so all these things then come his way. But there is that. Sometimes it's a desire to please men rather than a desire to escape sin. And then the last one, and I think we can identify with this, we've heard it lots of times, that there's no sense of urgency. In James chapter 4 and verse 14, your life is a vapor. You got a little bit of time. What are you going to do with it? Spend that time wisely, we're told in Ephesians. 2 Corinthians chapter 6 verse 2 tells you that today is the day of salvation. Not tomorrow, not yesterday, today. That's where we're all at, isn't it? You might be able to obey God tomorrow if you have a tomorrow. But you've got today. And there's no sense of urgency. Procrastination, put it off, all that kind of thing. We know what that's like, don't we? To put stuff off that needs to be done. Again, it's making better choices, isn't it? Take your songbooks, turn to the song that's been selected. Many times we do search for the right way, again, in a number of venues. However, if we find the right way, you know what we do when we find the right way?
we steadfastly put it to use. Anything like this, whatever it is, I mean, think of something, and if you find the right way, you know, I can remember when I was being trained as an electrician, you know, this wasn't house electrical work that I used to do. It was industrial work, which meant it was three phase. Instead of one wire hot in there were three. And it was higher voltage. Most of the time it was 440 volts. But we did occasionally have to work on up to and including over 4,000 volts. A little bit different. Instead of a tickle, you got a sizzle on the higher voltage. But I can remember learning a lot of things. And some things, you know, the speed that somebody could do this with, and I'd ask questions about it and try. And I was slow going about things, not like the rest of them were that had more experience, but I got faster, I got better. You know why? Because I found the right way, and I knew what was right and what should be done every time. Put it to use. Don't you do that? How'd you get to the building today? Most of you drove. You don't have the luxury of living across the parking lot. Most of you drove, didn't you? The route you chose to come here is what you think is the right one, the best one, for where you live. And you use that all the time. That's how it is. And so let's learn the right way of doing things, becoming a child of God, and learn the right way and do that. That's part of the way of escape. Now, to escape sin initially is to believe in Jesus Christ as the Son of God, repent of sin, turn away from it, practice it no more. Be baptized to find the forgiveness of sins, and then be diligent to walk in righteousness. If we could help someone today, we'd be glad to do so. If you're subject, why don't you come walk together? We stand and sing.